Good morning. Today has a high probability of being a short lesson. If you get an opportunity, I'd like for you to take time to meet our visitor today. Randy Heseltine is a man that Lowell and I used to work with at the dairy, and he's visiting with us today. So please take a moment and say hello to him. This is going to be the word of the day today. Enable. If I say you enabled that person to do that, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I guess it could be either one. To enable means to make available or make something have the opportunity to occur. And so those who have lived before us, who built this building, who taught our parents, have enabled us to be assembled here this morning. That's a good thing. Of the years that I've attended here, which I think is probably 48 years, I never heard Ori Brady give a Sunday morning lesson. But he enabled this congregation to have a more comfortable seat this morning. And I remember many times while he was with us that he gave of his blessings to for the betterment of the church. And although he never felt comfortable to be in the position to be in this rotation of speaking, it doesn't mean that he didn't enable this congregation to move forward with the efforts that he was able to provide for us. So all of us have different ways that we have opportunities presented to us that may enable us to be an active part of the congregation. And that's a good thing. But you know, it is possible that we enable someone to do something bad. One of my favorite stories out of the Bible is about Samuel and his beginning, and about his mother. And we're going to pull some verses out of 1 Samuel. So if you'd like to turn to that as we begin our lesson, you can follow along with that. And if you remember the story of Samuel's father, Elkanah, and his mother, Hannah. Hannah was barren and was unable to have children. And it made her life miserable to the point where she knew the only way that it could ever change was to approach God in prayer and beg for his intervention that he might provide her a baby boy that she could, in return, give back to the Lord for him to live his life in service to the Lord. And in this first chapter, in verse 9, it says, Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. And she vowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thee a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. Well, Eli thought, this woman is drunk, because he watched her as he was sitting there on a stool, and he seen her lips move, but he never seen her, never heard any words. And so he falsely accused her of being drunk. And Hannah said in verse 15, My Lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. And Eli said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. Well, this is the beginning of the story of a woman that, because of her fervent prayer, the prayer enabled her to become a mother. And it's interesting how this story intertwines around Eli and the needs that the Lord had for a new servant to lead his people. And because when we go into the next chapter, first in chapter 2, verse 12, we find out that Eli had not been everything that the Lord had hoped that he would be. Because Eli's sons were also in the priesthood. And in chapter 2, verse 12, it says, Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. They were plain out evil. And yet they were in the position of performing spiritual representation to the people on God's behalf. And they were, of all people, self-centered and evil in the things that they chose to do. Verse 22 through 25 says, Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons had done unto Israel, and how they had laid with women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he said unto them, Why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. Ye make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if man sin against God, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. Verse 27 through 31. And there came a man of God to Eli, and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, Did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon mine altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel? Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation? And you honor us, your sons, above me, to make yourselves fat with the cheapest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Wherefore the Lord God of Israel said, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now, the Lord saith, be it far from me. For them that honoreth me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house, that there shall not be an old man in your house. And so this man of God laid the prophecy before Eli that God was getting ready to separate himself from him because he didn't have the heart to discipline his family, his sons that were supposed to be representing him. And because of that, Eli would have to pay the price. In the third chapter, verse 13 and 14, it says, "For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever." And because Eli enabled his sons to misrepresent God and not stop them and remove them from their position and keep the office pure, Eli was to be removed as well. And shortly thereafter, his sons both died on the same day, and Eli fell over backwards and broke his neck. And so the Lord purged the evil himself because Eli didn't have the heart to do it, what was supposed to be done by him. So there we have an example of an unfortunate case of Eli enabling his sons to sin. Now I'd like to tell you about a Christian couple who both loved the Lord and actively applied what they read in the Scriptures. They studied with their children. They made them memorize memory verses. They taught them survival skills, both spiritually and physically, that they learned from the Depression and from World War II. This set of parents enabled their children to succeed in life, because they taught the entire message of the Scriptures, including a focus on the Lord's view of scriptural discipline, and the examples in the Scriptures of those who failed, such as Eli, when they failed to apply the Lord's disciplines, wishes in their lives. Now these two people raised four children who were all baptized believers by the age of 16. One child left the church as a young adult when his marriage failed, and he hadn't married someone that was well grounded in the truth, and so when hard times came, the marriage failed. But all four of these children entered into adulthood as Christians. Now, once this chain was broken by this adult child and he left the church, his three children and four grandchildren had the link broke of being educated of what the Lord's will was. And so not only he was not in the church, neither are his three children or his four grandchildren. But of the three children who stayed in the church, they produced 10 grandchildren who were all baptized by the age of 18. Out of those 10 grandchildren, 9 are still very active Christians who have produced 24 great-grandchildren who are all faithfully attending church. When the link gets broken and one falls out, it affects the oncoming generations. And it can go on forever if change is not sought. Now in Exodus, the 20th chapter, verse 12, it demands that we honor our father and our mother. It is the only commandment of the Ten Commandments, which is a directive of do this. All the other commandments are thou shalt not. The couple that we started off with there are my mother and father. I bring them up because as I've gotten to this point in my life, I see how hard it is to keep people faithful in service to the Lord. And it makes me grateful that they enabled me to be exposed to the Scriptures in the way that they did. And now they gave my brother and my sisters, my grandchildren, my children, all their great-grandchildren, the opportunity to learn the most important thing in life. This couple enabled me to know not only love, but to understand why the Lord also has discipline in the Bible. And one of the verses that we were taught was out of the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, that whom the Lord loves, he chastens. And that we need to learn to accept the fact that there's not a person born here on this earth that does not need to be chastened. And that the thing we need to do is to prepare ourselves that we humbly accept it. I wish every child got to grow up on the farm, because it would be a different world than what we live in now. If every child could witness sickness, witness birthing, witness death, and witness how devout a mother's protection of her young is at all costs, and see what the instincts that God has given all forms of life, it would be a better world if we could all witness those things. My parents enabled all four of us kids with qualities to succeed. They made us work as children, give us chores that we would contribute to the family's survival. They taught us respect, that if you get in trouble at school, it will be worse when you get home. People in authority, you listened to and obeyed. We were taught to help care for the livestock, because if you don't give them water and feed when it's needed, they'll get sick and die. You learned to be responsible. And my dad didn't care whether I become a janitor or the president. He says, whatever job you find yourself in, you do the job right or you don't do it at all and don't have your name associated with it. Because if you can't put forth the effort to do the little things right in life, how will you ever be able to do the bigger ones right? My father used to say, I'm not talking to you just to hear myself speak. When I tell you to do something, once is all you should need to be told. If I have to tell you twice, it will come with physical reinforcement. Do you understand? The Great Depression time that my mother and father grew up in, most families had more than four kids, and every one of those kids had to do things to help the family survive. There was no time for repeating instructions. I thank God regularly for the parents that He gave both Joyce and myself, because our parents enabled us to know God and His Son. He who hath the Father hath the Son, and he who hath not the one does not have the other. We were taught that God helps those who help themselves. And when you leave here today, you will either know God, K-N-O-W, or you will have no God. How are you going to start 2015? I hope it's with a K-N-O-W, that you know God, and that you can have proof of it by the way your daily life is shown and displayed to others. We offer you that chance to analyze your relationship with God, and if we can assist you in that relationship, come forward as we sing our invitation song.